Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Hey folks, welcome to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Lawrence Levens, who is a healthcare financial administrator and insurance consultant, and we'll be talking about your insurance and how you can best deal with some of the vagaries of today. Mike.
Vagaries of today. That's right. You picked the right day to talk about healthcare because I have no voice. So I will dispense with all the announcements except for this one. Santa Barbara City Firefighters 12th Annual Charity Golf Classic, Friday, September 12th. Glen Annie Golf Club, four-person scramble formats at $150 per player. Buffet awards, raffle, and prizes to follow at the Frog Bar and Grill. This again on September 12, 2014. I know that they still have a couple of limited slots open. Give them a call, 680-7593, or visit their website, IAFF525.org. That's IAFF525.org. And if I don't stop now, I'm going to lose my voice and I won't be able to get through the show. So, Lan, thank you very much for taking time to be out with us again today.
Glad to come. Thanks for the invitation.
We had you on April 15th, and we talked about insurance and people learning how to advocate for themselves. And then 2 weeks ago, on the 19th of August, we had Jerry Flanagan, an attorney that specializes in helping people actually advocate for themselves. And he opened up yet more room for discussion. And so I thought it was wise to bring you back. Coupled with that is several articles that just recently came out about the realities of healthcare and some of the truths that are now out there where people can see it. Real quickly, a little bit about your background so that folks can understand where you're coming from. You're not the lawyer's side. You're more on the expertise side, and then we'll get into this.
Yeah. My background for about 40 years has basically been doing the same thing. I've worked for hospitals, doctor's offices, consulting firms, where my responsibilities were for the billings to insurance companies, health insurance companies. As I got into the administrative area, I had some responsibilities for setting charges in related areas, the kind of committees that they dump on young administrators. But basically, everything revolved around working with insurance companies.
So what do you see happening now? Now, healthcare has sort of, it's landed, it's dispersed, people are engaged in it, things are starting to happen, there's things that are working, there are things that are not working. Where are we?
Well, actually, for those of us in the healthcare financial field, it's an exciting time. Everybody's talking about healthcare costs, health insurance, how they're going to manage their either their policies or, frankly, the fine they're going to have to pay at the federal level. A lot more interest now among individuals, which was not true 5 years ago, about how to get health care, how to get a good health care plan, how to follow through with their local providers and make sure they're going to get the care that they need. So there's it's unique in the history of the United States that this is occurring.
Who do you see as the winners and losers at this stage in the game? Who's winning in the game and who's falling on the side of the road?
There's still losers in terms of individuals who don't pay attention and sort of think it's somebody somewhere will do something for them. Patients, with all due respect to individuals with medical needs, fall into the same three groups as any others. There's those who make things happen, meaning they pay attention, buy insurances, and check on it. Those who watch other people do it, and those who wonder what happened. The losers are the ones who aren't yet paying attention and don't realize that health care is a mandate in the United States, or a fine is a mandate. So those are the losers, if I don't like the term particularly, but the winners are those who are paying attention, who buy health insurance policies after investigating and talking to their providers. And a number of people have insurance now who did not before.
Now, in my particular case, and I've always had an interest in this because this show is all about prevention and being aware, whether it be fire, earthquakes, floods, but also health is a big, big issue, more so now than ever before, with disease coming back in that we used to think was eradicated, and my voice being one of them. But the question then becomes, in my case, the insurance company decided to drop me for no particular reason, and I found out by fluke because I went to renew a prescription. I had easily been in the emergency room and found out the hard way. And it had been canceled for over 2.5 months, allegedly for failure to pay, which in fact was flat out not true, which is a pattern of conduct that I have since learned is very typical business practice for them. And nonetheless, how many people are running around out there right now with a card in their wallet thinking they have insurance where in fact they don't have squat?
Well, the general feeling in the field, and I'm in touch with a number of listeners on both a national and California level, is that because of the conduct of the insurances, there are more and more people who think they have insurance but do not. And the only way to find out for certain is to take your policy out and call your insurance or try to use it for something routine, much as you would test a credit card, or call your broker if that's what you where you purchase the policy and actually test your policy to see if it's in force or not. You're supposed to get notice. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to always be happening. But again, there's nothing unusual about this. As I've shared in presentations, this particular problem of insurance companies retroactively or without notice canceling someone goes back 10, 20 years. It's an ongoing problem, but seems to be increasingly acute right now.
Was it Proposition 103, I think? Wasn't that the one that was supposed to alleviate this in the automotive side of the street?
I believe it was.
I think that's what it was. Because this is a business practice that's been going on for a long time. They didn't just invent it. Ted, you had a call.
I want to go back to purchasing insurance. Insurance is a difficult thing for many people to purchase because they don't really know what they're buying. They're not in the position where they need it, so they don't really know the ins and outs of what's going to occur when they do need it. And so all they can rely on is the agent that they're buying from and whatever information is in front of them. But they don't read that information with any kind of insight into what they particularly are going to need under what sort of circumstances because they don't know what that is. So I'm taking the buyer's point here, and that is that I don't know whether it's falling down on the broker's standpoint or the company's standpoint or being able to educate people about what they're going to need. And you're saying, and I think it's a good idea, to test your policy. But, of course, testing your policy is not always that easy because you're not testing under all conditions. You're testing to see whether you can get a prescription filled or what they're going to charge you to see a doctor. So it's not what the American public is used to buying because we're used to being able to put it on, you know, or stand back and look at it, cook the tires or whatever. And that's not true of insurance.
Yeah. Ted, I completely agree with everything you said. And there's a lot of reasons why individuals don't know how to evaluate, much less purchase, much less determine whether they'll be able to use their health insurance policy or not. That's part of the failure, of course, goes back. We blame the public school system. They don't teach how to balance your checkbook, much less how to read a health insurance policy.
Right.
But that's kind of an easy scapegoat to blame. It's an individual responsibility, which the U.S. public is having mandated onto it. Very few people seem to realize that the Affordable Care Act included a mandate to understand your health insurance and purchase intelligently. That means taking the time to first of all, learn how to read the policy, and secondly, to read it and determine whether it's going to cover you under some circumstances, specifically, for example, your local providers. There's a number of agencies that are available to help. The one I mentioned on my last discussion with you is the HICAP, Health Insurance Counseling Advocacy Program. Every county in California supports a professional full-time administrator in charge of HICAP. They use volunteers as well as the professional, and their sole single function is to help people choose and maintain health insurance. But it's very underutilized. Where they've advertised it, they don't find people using it as much as they should. And frankly, I'm a volunteer for that organization. The people who come in the last few years that I experienced them are, even though they're aware of ACA and they want help, what they really want to be is told what to buy.
And I think that the thing we're running into, and Mike and I preach on this show, is that for people to take personal responsibility for where they find themselves, whether it's about clearing the brush around their house, whether it's buying their insurance policy when they get behind the wheel of a car, all those things. And I think that the last couple of generations haven't had to take a lot of responsibility because it's all been kind of put out there for us. And now, suddenly, we're getting into a position where people are going to have to start paying more attention and giving more time to actually going through these things.
Well, speaking of paying attention and time, we're up to our first break. Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, talking about insurance today. This is a good topic. We'll see you in just a minute after these announcements on Community Alert, KZSB, AM 1290.
Folks, welcome back to the program. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Lan Levens, who is a healthcare financial administrator, insurance consultant, and we're talking about your policies and how you can best administrate them and how to go about buying a policy and how about using it.
Well, I have to apologize for having lost my voice here because this is an important topic, and I know people are going to be listening to it, and I'm apologizing because it almost makes me want to go and do this thing again when I come back to reality. But what's happening in the insurance industry? It seems as if they've taken a don't-go-away-mad-just-go-away approach, not just in healthcare, but with property claim, property insurance, fire insurance, auto loans. Is it because they have such a captive audience they don't have to take care of customer service anymore, or is there something broader going on?
I don't think it's an anymore type of thing. I don't think anything's really changed. There are reportedly more cancellations, but you have to understand there's only about four or five insurance companies that really underwrite health insurance in California. There's a few smaller companies, so it's kind of a given. If you have to buy health insurance, which the federal law says
you must
or pay a fine, then those who get angry at Blue Shield because they're canceled are going to go to Blue Cross. Those who are angry because they were canceled by Blue Cross are going to go to Blue Shield. What isn't being paid a lot of attention to is the fact that when you change insurances, they'll raise your premium. Even if you go back to the same insurance company, if Blue Shield cancels you and you say, no, that was inappropriate, or I still want coverage, can I purchase another policy, the premium is going to be higher, perhaps much higher. So this I don't want to use an impolite term, this banging back and forth means that a finite group of policyholders have to buy insurance, and there's an extremely finite number of sellers. And maybe they're sharing market, different percentages of market share back and forth. I'm not a health insurance expert in terms of their marketing plans, but that's really what appears to be happening. And each insurance company finds some criteria or just for some reason cancels a policy. That person either comes back to them and pays a higher premium or goes to another insurance and pays a higher premium. Profits go up.
So basically what I'm hearing is that there's a policy of sorts, it's probably not in writing, that says for any valid reason we can possibly create to cancel somebody, cancel them. If they come back, go through the process and then go ahead and raise the rates and reset their deductible.
It appears like that. I'm not an insider on any health insurance company, at least not right now. I worked for PacifiCare for a while. I worked for the company that owned PacifiCare. This was not a rampant problem then. It went on, but I wasn't in contact with it. So I can't speak for you. That's exactly what's happening. So I don't know the drivers, but I know what the outcome is, and that is higher premiums and higher profits for the insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. So Blue Cross and Blue Shield, they are not parent companies, or they are completely separate companies, Blue Cross and Blue Shield?
California, they're completely separate companies. They have links and associations with National Blue Shield and National Blue Cross. So there's an overlapping relationship. In some states, Blue Cross, Blue Shield even write policies together, not in California. And I don't know the reason for that. I assume they're not allowed to there. But the bottom line is you're buying a different policy from two different insurance companies if you're talking about the two of them. And then it comes down to the next step is when the policyholder, a.k.a. the patient, takes that policy into a medical provider, doctor, emergency room, hospital, MRI, or like any medical provider. The question then becomes is that policy and that insurance company honored by that medical provider? And the answer is, well, we'll have to look it up. I've had entire staffs whose sole job in a hospital was to take the patients as they came in the door, take their insurance company, and telephone the insurance company, or their insurance information, telephone the insurance company to see if they're covered. And if they are they covered for this treatment, for this admission at this hospital?
Well, let's let's change discussion here slightly. We know the individual policyholders have a problem. We've demonstrated that. What about the physicians and the physicians' groups and the labs and all the people that are trying to get paid? What about their little world right now?
As I shared a little while ago, the primary job that I had for almost 40 years was billing and collecting from insurance companies. That was one of my biggest responsibilities. My job was based on the fact that insurance companies don't pay every claim, and frankly, unless they're forced to, there has to be a billing or a rebilling or a follow-up. So providers, every provider, unless they're on a capitation program where they're paid consistently, has to prepare a bill in accordance with the mandates of that third-party payer that they expect payment from, the insurance company, and they have to send it in, and if they get paid, that's great. If they don't get paid, then they've got to do collections follow-up. So there's, from what I've seen of the industry right now, there's no major change in that. The insurance companies pay some right away, some they don't. And I don't want to go into the details of capitation. That gets a little bit accounting-wise. Nobody likes accounting these days. But the bottom line is the providers are having a problem as well.
Because you talk to individual physicians, especially young ones, who are trying to pay off their student loans, get a practice started, all the costs and overhead of that. Plus, they have their own insurance they have to go out and get for liability and general practice and what have you. It's becoming cost prohibitive to have a practice. How are you supposed to do it?
They have to raise their rates to cover the cost of their own staff and their own health insurance. They're an employer just like anybody else.
Correct.
Medical providers, physicians are the same. They need to buy health insurance on the same market. And yeah, so if a doctor can't purchase health insurance for himself, his family, and his staff, then he's got to do something else, which may mean going to work in perhaps a medical staff function rather than treat patients directly. He might have to go to work for an insurance company as a utilization review person or something like that. There are other options than directly treating patients, but there aren't a lot of them.
Let me ask you a question. Several years ago now, I was in an automobile accident. I spent a lot of time in the hospital and a lot of physical therapy and lots of ancillary drug and all that sort of thing. And I ended up with this deluge of paperwork that came from all the different and I have, fortunately, I was old enough to have Medicare, and I also have ancillary coverage. But what would happen for me is that I got reams and reams and reams and reams of paper and billing and accounting and all this sort of thing. Is there anyone operating as an intercedent for the patient that can go through this stuff and make sure that they're getting billed properly and that they're actually because to me, I mean, it's just like way too much information. Very complicated. I'd get bills, and then they'd say you have to pay this bill, and then oh well, we got paid by the company, and so you paid the bill, and you didn't need to. And I mean, you know, you laugh,
but it was a grimace. Chuckle.
It's very, very difficult, especially if you're not feeling well, you're incapacitated, and all this stuff comes. Is there anyone that intercedes or anyone that you can pay to sort through all that stuff? And how do you go about finding them, and how does that work?
Well, the answer is yes. The volunteers at the HICAP program, Health Insurance Counseling Advocacy Program, take that as one of their responsibilities. You can bring in what we traditionally call the shoebox. Mm-hmm. For some reason, people always have shoeboxes. They put their bills in there, and when they get worried enough about it, they take it somewhere. Interestingly enough, almost 10, 11 years ago, when I first opened my consulting business, it was as Patients Medical Claims Assistance, PMCA. And the business model there was very simple. You pay me $49 a month, send me all your paper, and for that flat fee, which you could cancel anytime, I'll sort through it, tell you, throw this, file this, pay this. And I began to enroll hundreds and hundreds of people. I expected to make it in volume, because once you know what you're doing with this stuff, it goes pretty quick. And one of the things I did was help a lady, a female veteran, retired veteran, and I noticed that she wasn't getting paid on a claim, and that's what she asked me to come in and work on. I got that claim paid. It was over $10,000 from an insurance company. Shortly thereafter, I received a formal letter from the then insurance commissioner, Mr. Garamendi, saying, what you're doing is illegal in the state of California. Cease and desist immediately. There's a $10,000 penalty if you're getting paid to do this. Volunteers can do it. But to answer your question, as to a professional, someone with a background and experience like me, we're not allowed to charge for it. And frankly, I got to make a living like anybody else. So I shut that portion of my business down completely, took my website down, and received a number of angry calls from the people to whom I sent checks back when they arrived. So the answer is, yeah, there's HICAP, and yeah, there's friends. But until somebody, perhaps like Jerry, the attorney that you had on last time, challenges that, what we call the cupcake law, then people like me can't charge even a lousy $49 a month, and some people I didn't charge at all, of course, to just walk through all the bills. But yeah, if you're sick and injured, you're still going to get all kinds of paperwork.
Ironically, the insurance companies have a litany of people that they'll use for doing the very same thing.
Yes.
And those nurses are making good money. And with that, we're up to our next break. We'll be back with Lan in just a minute on Community Alert. Not yet, but win. Positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, live on the internet at newspress.com.
Folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we are visiting with Lawrence Lan Levens, who is a healthcare financial administrator, insurance consultant, and he's talking with us about our insurance policies and how we can best serve ourselves by learning more about what we have in the way of insurance. Mike.
Let's get into the hospital. We've talked about patients and individuals. We've talked a little bit about physicians, physician groups, the labs. What about the hospitals? Where are they right now in the financial disarray of all of this?
Most hospitals are struggling financially. You can test that by going on to the California webpage that lists, provides the balance sheet income statement for every hospital in California, and you can calculate their bottom line. 1%, 2%, 3%, minus 2, 3, 5%. Hospitals do go under. The industry is trying to find a way to provide higher quality care at lower costs, which is sort of like saying everybody's going to drive a Bentley for health care, but we're going to charge a Volkswagen. There's got to be a hat. They're trying to find the medium in there. So hospitals see the Affordable Care Act and as an a harder push for a business model which controls costs as much as possible. The problem is hospitals have difficulty controlling costs simply because many of their costs are outside their reach. A drug company can raise their rates 18%, and the hospital has to raise their drug charges 18%. If the nurses win a 12 or 15 or 20% salary increase, that's what the patient has to pay because the hospital has to charge that. And nothing in the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, changes those costs. So hospitals are in a squeeze play between this demand to reduce costs, and yet nothing there actually changed the increase of the costs. Nurses continue to get salaries, and they're wonderful people. I mean, I love nurses. They're doing God's work when they're treating patients, and they're entitled to their money and their raises. But the reality is, as the costs continue to go up in all segments, then the hospital has to continue to increase its charges. There's not a lot of fat in there they can cut, despite what people may believe when they look at the healthcare costs.
Well, you know, it's interesting. As you go up to many hospitals, and Santa Barbara's is no exception, and these hospitals look like castles. They got $10,000 desks. They've got teak wood. They've got all kinds of fancy artwork on the walls. They've spent millions upon millions upon millions of dollars on these structures, and yet financially they're not secure. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I've always argued the way to tell the quality of a hospital is to compare the back door with the front door. And it's baffling to me. There's money being made hand over fist. It's just not in the way that I think traditional business enterprise works.
Yeah. Well, I have to agree with that. You can look at their balance sheet and see what they're actually making. It's also easy to get a little misdirected. There's two reasons why a hospital has a very attractive lobby. One is it's a marketing procedure.
Sure.
Hospitals have to sell their system just like anybody else. Nobody wants to walk into something that looks like it's a slum area. Secondly, when you see art hanging on the wall, quite often it wasn't the hospital that paid for it. It was the foundation, people who are friends of the hospital,
yeah.
Even individuals who donated their late husband or late wife's art collection. So there's a lot of that going on. Whether it happens in Santa Barbara, I'm not 100% sure. I know when I worked at Cedars-Sinai, that's where the artwork came from.
And I don't dispute it. I think it's great. I'm not arguing that they shouldn't do it to create a nice atmosphere and whatever, but you can't claim you're broke when you're living large. You know, it's like the campaign things. We need money. We're dying here and everything, and they're on pieces of paper that cost a dollar a sheet.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense.
You have to remember, St. Francis, just before they filed bankruptcy and closed their doors, had a beautiful plant, a wonderful lobby.
Yeah.
But I don't think it cost them anything. I think the church provided a lot of that. Bottom line is, operating funds are where the rubber hits the road. If they've got enough to pay the nurses, then they stay open. If they don't, I haven't seen scenarios where they're using it to put teak paneling up. It may be part of the marketing, or a friend of the hospital provided it. But if they're only making 1 or 2% or less.
You know, the job of a nurse today is just, it's unbelievable. And these people don't make enough money. I don't know how much they make, but it's not enough. I was watching a home care nurse, both in the house as well as at the hospital. They have to take pictures before and after they do their dressings. The amount of documentation and scanning that goes on. They spend more time on the administrative management component of patient care than they ever do with touching the actual patient. Now, I know there's variations of that, and this is all being driven by risk management and billing, but it's become impossible. I mean, I'm sympathetic to all the players in this. As much as it's easy to bash them, it's also easy to be sympathetic to everyone's plight, because we're just killing ourselves with the risk management, the administration of this. What's the solution?
Yeah, what is the solution?
Come on, man, fix it for us.
As you were speaking, my reaction, the phrase I was going to make is, well, I can't speak to the litigious nature of California and how to fix that, because I don't know how to fix that.
Yeah.
There is litigation. People do sue. There's limitations. Excuse me. There's limitations on some awards and everything. But the bottom line is, yeah, a lot of the nurses' work, a lot of the any medical provider's work is partly in documenting or providing the documents necessary to prove that the course of action which they prescribed or provided was the correct one as an alternative to others. And, yeah, it's a cost the patient has to pay for.
The cottage, I know, because I sat and listened to these people complain for a better part of 2 hours out in the patio, have, I guess they're called scribes. Mm. But they're basically people that follow you around, and whatever you say, think, and do gets transcribed, which makes perfect sense. But the burnout on these people is amazing. And it's that's going to be a difficult job, too. I mean, at some point, there has to be some kind of compromise. Obviously, you need good documentation in healthcare for a variety of obvious reasons. But how are we going to do it, and how is it going to be done efficiently and without bankrupting us? That's going to be a challenge.
It's been a challenge for years. There's nothing unusual about that. Scribes are a job whose sole primary function is to make the physician usually more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, short of doing surgery and putting a memory coil in the back of the surgeon's head or the physician's head, you've got to have somebody, either the doctor has to write it down or somebody writes it down for him or her. And that's the purpose of scribes. And there's a lot of controversy as to whether that's cost effective or not. Bottom line is, the patient has to pay for that documentation regardless. And insurance companies are paying for it. It's not a separate charge. It comes in under indirect costs. So it's not as if the patient bill shows a scribe bill. There's talk about maybe it should, but then it would be just one other item not to pay somewhere down the line.
You know,
efficiency is where the healthcare industry is going to survive or not.
Well, if we weren't so litigious, there wouldn't have to be so much documentation. But we live in, especially in this country, we live in a litigious society.
Mm-hmm.
And a small percentage of the population is looking for a way to economically benefit from the failings of some corporation or some public utility or some entity. If we didn't have that, we'd all be paying less money for many, many things. But we just have to accept the fact that that's where we live, and because a small percentage of us are going after it.
How much of the medical practice is actually litigious? How much of it's really litigated? And how much of this is being driven by federal estate mandates, American with Disability Act, and equity of access statutes, and housing authority requirements, and on and on and on and on and on it goes? I'm not sure, as much as I'd like to say it's the lawyers, I'm not sure it's really necessarily the lawyers that are driving it all. I'm not sure.
But the law is driving it, if
that's
not the
sure.
lawyers.
I think back of Howard Phillips' book, The Death of Common Sense. That went away a long time ago. Because I look at what my veterinarian does, and I told my vet, if anything happens to me, I'm coming to see you. And with that thought, because maybe he'll give me my voice back, although some of his techniques are something that I'm a little concerned about. On Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, we'll be back with Lan in just a minute on KZSB AM 1290.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Lan Lawrence Levens, who is a healthcare, now that I got my glasses on.
You and I are just not on frequency today. Lan, I'm curious here. We've kind of taken this from a different variety of perspectives. Are we as a society expecting too much in healthcare? Are we expecting everything to absolutely be perfect 100% of the time? Are we ignoring the fact that this is not the way nature operates, that this is not the way most human beings in the world live, and that maybe we're expecting too much? Our demands are out of whack with reality?
Well, I think one of the reasons we have those expectations is because we pay so much for them. So if we're paying for them, we expect the best. And when we find that that's not forthcoming, then we have something to say about it.
Well, I would agree with you. That's one of my biggest complaints. I pay for insurance. You said, go call the 800 number and see if your policy. Well, one, I shouldn't have to. The fact that they cash my check should be sufficient. Mm-hmm. But I got to stay online with Blue Shield for hours before they answer the phone. And then who do you talk to? Somebody whose language is not what mine is. And that does not help. That does not instill. And like Ted says, I'm paying for this. This is crazy.
I agree with what you're saying. We expect a lot from our healthcare system. The United States generally, in its citizenry, and I include myself, I'm not exclusive, they expect a fast food type fix when they're sick. They expect to go in, get service right away, maybe because they're paying for it, but even interestingly enough, those who aren't paying for it expect immediate service, and they expect the problem to be fixed as quickly as possible. Now, there's the human side of that. Even individuals who have not taken care of themselves and have got 10, 20, even 50 years worth of built-up illness expect an immediate fix for the what they've taken 50 years to cause. And I don't mean to pick on people, but you're talking about the diabetic who didn't control their diet or didn't check their sugar or didn't take their meds, or the morbidly obese person who's progressively destroyed their body over maybe 50 years, the individual who skydives and isn't properly trained. I mean, individuals...
Smokers fall into that.
Well, okay, I was going to include smokers, but I don't want to pick on anybody particularly, especially. But the bottom line is, people don't take care of themselves, and then they expect at some point when things go wrong to have that immediately fixed. And it doesn't. The body doesn't work that way. Healthcare doesn't work that way. But somehow it becomes the fault of the healthcare system.
You know, I've been trying to find this article. The Wall Street Journal, way back in the mid-'80s, somewhere around 82, 83, had an article about how CEOs took better care of their equipment than they took care of themselves. That if vehicles in their motor pool needed oil changes every 4,000 miles, they did them every 3,500, the factory machines and what have you. And yet if you looked at the CEOs of the 1980s who were all doing the big cocktail lunches and all the stuff that went on back then, most of them were falling apart. And I really want to find that article because I think it would probably tune in to write exactly what we're talking about here. And that is maybe our expectations as a society, both as a consumer as well as the other end of the people trying to say, look at all these wonderful things that we can do to you. Truth is, we can keep somebody alive pretty much forever. How much are you willing to spend? And what production is that? And what quality of life are you expecting to have from that?
And it's expected that, you know, ideally somebody else will pay for it. That's where it starts to get really difficult, where somebody hasn't worked long enough to qualify for Medicare or they haven't purchased an insurance policy and they suddenly discovered that the problems they've caused with their body is going to cost them a lot of money because there's nobody else going to pay for it. Nobody's obligated to pay for it. And this is where it's a real societal shift. People are beginning to realize that they get a better insurance policy if they're healthier. I worked for hospitals a good part of my career. every hospital I ever worked at had a mandatory physical exam every year. And if you didn't meet the requirements in many hospitals, going back a few years, because now that's more difficult, you were put on probation. You were told you've got to lose this much weight or you've got to stop smoking. And it was my employer, the hospital's physician, employed physician, telling me that. Not my personal physician. You want to keep your job? You got to lose 40 pounds and drop your body mass by X points. And then they said, by the way, we got a gymnasium on campus here. We use it called the physical therapy department. It's available to you. Document when you use it. Now, that course caused all kinds of problems because people didn't like to be forced to be healthy, but that's one of the subtler directions that we're heading in America.
Well, that's going to become a practical reality, and I can see the unions went berserk over that.
They'll die, you know, brutally, they'll die off.
Oh, yeah.
And the healthier people will pay lower insurance premiums, which sort of goes on now to some extent. And that's going to be a tough thing for Americans to swallow, but it's going to happen. It's already happening in England, where I understand the second lung transplant is not provided. You get one lung transplant. If you continue to trash it as a smoker, then you don't get the second one. You're just given pain pills and you die.
But then I can hear the person right now out there saying, well, what about the person that's born with a hereditary disease? My stepdaughter has a serious cardiac problem. I mean, she was born with it. She didn't ask for that problem. No one will insure her except for what she's got. That's a different scenario, though.
Absolutely. She's not part of the group I'm talking about.
Right.
I'm talking about, well, guys like me, diagnosed with diabetes at age 50, told I had 3 to 8 years to live because I've also got a variety of other problems, comorbidities they're called. I was given 3 to 8 years. That was almost 20 years ago. I'm now 70. I turned 70 October 1st this year, and I bet that I'm one of the healthiest people you know because I exercise, I take 7 pills a day, I stick multiple needles in my body, none of which is fun, but I also control my eating, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Someone who didn't do that would have died a long time ago, and I'm proud of that. That's the only reason I bring it up, but not enough people have figured out that that's part of the way to get their insurance premiums.
Well, and that gets us to where we want to be on this show, and that's prevention. And when I was 18, 20, 25, 30, and 35, and 40, I didn't care about much of this stuff. But that was a long time ago now. Now I care about it. How do I, and all the people that are in our age group who are now experiencing this, how can we share what we see and know to be true with those that are behind us, that are coming behind us, and say, look, you need to start paying attention to this now because it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better.
If I was elected king or whatever the phrase is and I could mandate items, I would put healthcare education as a solid subject, including learning healthcare insurance, into the public schools, and I would start in junior high. It would be a mandatory class every year, and you had to pass it to graduate. Maybe you should be given an exam that says, here's 3 policies, which one is best? And if you don't pass that, you don't graduate from high school. That's one of the requirements. So that's where education has to start. And secondly, you know, every time you see a heavy kid, you see a failed parent. So part of that has to go back to people, frankly, our ages, those who have kids, who need to become more responsible in taking care of their children. You just can't let the kid eat 3 hot dogs and expect them not to have health problems. If not then certainly later in their life.
Of course,
so accountability is very big.
Often the parents have the same problem, and then what do? You know that, and the grandparents had a problem in that area. I mean, it was 3 square meals a day, and that was a healthy person. You know, 3 square meals a day, and then pretty soon they weigh 300 pounds, and that was a sign of good health at one time, is to be overweight. So we've got a lot of changing to do, and we're working on it.
That's where it goes back to the theme of this show and why I take the time to come on it. Accountability, individual awareness and accountability is going to be the key to those who control their health care expenses as well as their physical health. And frankly, you're a lot happier in health, you're happier when you're healthier. But I think that's a generational solution. It's not going to happen overnight, but at least people are talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why shows like yours are great. And why we have to move toward this level of awareness. And, yeah, there's HICAP and other programs, which if you walk in with your shoebox full of medical bills, will help you sort through it and will help you choose another health insurance or a health insurance.
How come we don't see these challenges to this degree in the dental world? You know, the dentists seem to have gotten something figured out. What is it that they're doing different?
My dentist just calls me up if I don't come in for my quarterly checkup.
Yeah, mine does, too. They're aggressive.
Yeah, but it doesn't cost as much, and that's part of it.
And that includes oral surgeons and people that work in and out of hospitals. Dentists are not just people that clean teeth and whatever. And a lot of them are highly skilled people. It's an incredibly difficult profession. It's extremely expensive to get through dental school. It's very competitive. I think you get a better chance of getting into veterinary school than dental school. And yet, dentists just don't seem to have so many of the challenges. And I've just struck that as odd. They got very much the same education, not to the extreme that some surgeons and what have you have. But, they just have a different setup, and I just don't have the problems with them, even though it's the same insurance company.
But the different division. Dental divisions of health or insurance are different. I worked in the dental health insurance area for a while. But, maybe that's good news. Maybe that means there's a solution out there where people learn that they take care of themselves and control their eating, much as they've learned they got to floss and brush.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Right. Well, speaking of that, we're getting the high sign from the ever-diligent Richard Dugan on Community Alert. We'll be back with Les in just a minute. KZS.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today, we're visiting with Lawrence Levens, Lan Levens, and he's a healthcare financial administrator and insurance consultant, and we've been talking about your insurance policies and how it affects you and how you can make a change in it and all that goes with it.
Well, I apologize again to our listeners not having a good voice today because this is a very important subject matter, and it also applies to those of you out there that are working for a big employer, government agency, whatever, and you don't think this is going to matter because you've got a risk management department takes care of all this and whatever. Newsflash, it does. Any closing thoughts?
The important takeaway for anybody that's worried about their health care costs is that they have to learn how to purchase health insurance. And it's a mandate now from the federal government. You either pay the fine or you purchase health care insurance. You need the insurance anyway. It's not enough to rely on even your employer's human resource department. What people need to do is learn how to evaluate a policy. The question is, how do you do that? Well, there's two or three ways. One, the most obvious one, is go to the Health Insurance Counseling Advocacy Program. That's HICAP. It's in the Santa Barbara phone book under county government. And ask them. They have regular classes in many cases on how to choose a policy, and they'll certainly help you with that stack of EOBs and bills coming in after an illness. Secondly, there are classes being offered at both the local city college and also in some of the private colleges, which actually provide health insurance 101, and it starts out with a basic definition of terms. Most people haven't taken those courses, so they're not that popular yet. But as people begin to encounter the fact that they need to learn how to read a health insurance policy, that's one of the best places to go.
Now, you have a website that also has information available on it. What's that address?
www.lawrencelevens.com. Just my name with no period or dots. www.lawrencelevense.com. And there's information out there. It'll direct you to different places. In fact, I'm expanding the webpage in the next week or two to include a more consumer-oriented section, which will have how to find high cap in areas like that. But the bottom line is education, both for yourself and for your family.
Well, I can't stress it enough because just in my own experience with just trying to get a prescription filled, I fell into a bit of a nightmare. And I want to share not the nightmare, but the experience with people because there's no reason for you to be in the back in a hospital and find out that your insurance has been canceled on you after the fact and the games that you're going to have to put yourself through. And so prevention is the best. And the irony, when I asked the ladies at Blue Shield repeatedly, how do I prevent this from happening to me in the future, they all said the same thing. You can't. It's going to happen again. So I went to automatic pay. I know automatic pay will at least solve a portion of that problem. So with that, we're up at the end of the show here. Any closing thoughts on your side of the street, Ted, before we go?
No, stay healthy, stay happy.
You've got a workshop tomorrow night, correct?
Tomorrow night at the museum, Natural History, we have a workshop on the chaparral and how to keep it clear around your home, and a lot of divergent opinions. We're hoping we'll get a good turnout for that.
Yeah, that's very good.
I think it's at 4:30.
You're going to take your helmet with you?
Pardon?
You're going to take a helmet with you?
Yeah. A raincoat, I think.
Yeah,
see.
Exactly. And one last time again, Santa Barbara City Firefighters 12th Annual Celebrity Golf Classic, Friday, September 12th, 2014. Further information, 680-7593, 680-7593. The news is next on Community Alert, KZSB AM 1290. See you next week.
Community Alert is produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, with funding provided by a grant from the Cooperative Fire Program of the U.S. Forest Service, Department of Agriculture, Pacific Southwest Region, through the California Fire Safe Council, with additional funding provided by the Fire Services Training Institute. The views and conclusions contained in this program are those of the hosts and guests and should not be interpreted as representing the opinions or policies of the California Fire Safe Council, U.S. Forest Service, the U.S. government, or this station. Any mention of trade names or commercial products does not constitute their endorsement by the California Fire Safe Council or the U.S. government. Commercial use or rebroadcast is prohibited. For further information, call 805-964-7194 or visit wildlandresidents.org. Technical assistance provided by Richard Dugan, Jim Williams, and Mark A. Ward. The WRA and this station are equal opportunity providers.